Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For nearly 40 years, the city of Belfast was synonymous with bombings, murders, and guerrilla warfare.
Police reported 56 hijackings, 17 bombings, 23 shooting incidents, and nearly 200 attacks on the security.
The conflict in Northern Ireland between the British government and the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, ended in 1998. Officially, that is, but the troubles continued to bubble up in unexpected places. In 2013, Patrick Radenkeefe stumbled across an obituary of a woman named Dolores Price.
She was the first woman to serve as a real frontline soldier in the IRA. She was part of that civil rights movement in Northern Ireland in the late 1960s, and she got radicalized. And she ends up leading a bombing mission to England and getting arrested and going to jail and going on hunger strike.
She helped blow up the Old Bailey.
She led the mission. And this is when she's scarcely out of her teens. She goes toe-to-toe with Margaret Thatcher. Eventually, Thatcher lets her out of prison. And later in her life, after the peace process, she was very disaffected.
After the Troubles, Dolores Price took part in a secret oral history project. Members of the IRA were interviewed on tape about the acts of warfare and violence that they'd committed. The tapes were sent to Boston College here in the U.S., and each record was supposed to remain sealed until the interviewee had died.
And in 2013, when Dolores Price died, it had come out that she had been involved in what was one of the most notorious incidents in the Troubles, which was in 1972. There was a woman named Jean McConville, who was a mother of 10 and a widow, who was taken away by the IRA and disappeared. She was killed, but her body was buried in an unmarked grave. Her kids never knew what happened to her.
Why would she have been killed by the IRA?
The children didn't know at the time. What we learned later is that the IRA maintains to this day that she was an informant for the British Army.
She's a mother of 10. What could she possibly know that it would have been of tremendous value to the IRA?
This is what her children, who are now adults, say, is that they really vehemently contest any suggestion that she had been an informant. They say, what would she know? She was trying to take care of us.
Is there an answer to that question?
There's not a definitive answer. In the book, I lay out the evidence on both sides, and there are people who today will swear up and down that she was and that she wasn't. So I don't know.
So what when you say they disappeared this woman, what exactly did they do to her? And when was it discovered?
Well, again, we didn't know. The children didn't know. One night in December 1972, she's at home with her kids, and a group of people comes and knocks on the door in a housing project in West Belfast. They barge in. They have guns. They're masked. And they pull Jean McConville out. And her kids were quite young. The youngest were two twins who were 6 years old at the time. They're clinging to her legs. They're screaming. These intruders say, "We'll bring her back. We just want to talk to her." And they never saw her again. It was only in 2003 that her body was found.
2003, 30-odd years later.
31 years later, her body's found by a beachcomber in the Republic of Ireland walking along a beach one day.
So they're finding bones.
They found bones. And there had been some storms and so some erosion in that coastal area, and these bones were kind of churned up from the ground. And it was only more than a decade after that that people like Dolores Price started talking, and some of these secrets began to come out about the circumstances of this death.
Why would they talk?
Because they experienced great trauma. So part of what I was trying to do in this book is take one violent incident and approach it as you would a novel. And you've got a handful of compelling, interesting characters, real people. And you look at the way it affected them, the victims and the perpetrators alike, and how that played out over the decades. And for some of them, people like Dolores Price, there was a huge amount of trauma associated with the violent acts that she had committed in the name of a united Ireland. So she looks back as a mother herself, as somebody reaching middle age, and begins to reevaluate some of the things she's done.
And what access did you have to the papers at Boston College?
It was pretty limited. So they—
Because they're not all dead.
Well, there's that. But then the other thing is that there was a huge political fight. Part of the reason I thought there might be a story here, initially a magazine article, was that on the one hand, it's a story about a terrible murder that happened in 1972. On the other hand, it's a story about how that history far from being remote or a closed case or a cold case that nobody's paying any attention to, was incredibly politically explosive.
How so?
Because more than one person had talked in this archive at Boston College about the circumstances of Jean McConville's death. And it emerged that people were pointing a finger at Gerry Adams.
So Gerry Adams, we should explain, is somebody who was always thought to be a leader of the Provisional IRA, involved in violent acts. He's always denied it. He was also a member of Parliament in Britain and a leader of the Irish political party, Sinn Féin. And he became a pivotal figure in the reconciliation in the 90s. So why would this be such a big deal all these years later?
Well, for a variety of reasons. One is that Adams, who I feel pretty comfortable saying was in fact commander in the IRA for many years.
How do you know?
Because I've interviewed a whole bunch of people who were in the IRA with him, and because really it's Adams who maintains today that he was never in the IRA and there's nobody else.
So you're saying that he ordered the killing of Jean McConville?
Yes. Yes. And more than one person who was involved has said this. He denies it, but he denies he was ever in the IRA. Look, it's funny. I did want to talk to Adams, but I was also mindful that just because you get the interview doesn't mean he's going to tell you anything. I had this hilarious encounter when I was doing the reporting where I talked to a former IRA guy who's known Adams for a long time, and he was saying, look, even if he talks to you, he's not going to tell you anything. And I sort of said, hey, don't underestimate me. You know, I've got my ways. And the guy kind of chuckled and he said, you know, Jerry's had what they call counter-interrogation training. This means you could be torturing the man and he wouldn't tell you anything. And he looked at me and he says, but if you want to go in with your wee notebook, good luck to you.
Listeners, please note that was Patrick Keefe doing the imitation, not David Remnick. Now, Adams, you're saying, ordered this murder and ordered Dolores Price to do it. What was their relationship like, and did it stay the same?
It didn't, and that's part of the dramatic arc of the book, is that there were a handful of people who were characters in the book who were very, very close when they were young members of the IRA in the early 1970s. And it wasn't just Dolores Price. It was her sister, Marion Price. It was a guy named Brendan Hughes who was involved in many of these operations. And they did some awful things. They set bombs in public places. They killed people. And they did so in the name of a united Ireland. And then in the 1990s, Adams, whose political instincts had always been a little bit more evolved, perhaps, than some of his contemporaries in the IRA, starts to realize we're not going to fight the British into the sea. And so he starts taking part in this peace process. And what that means for Dolores Price and Brendan Hughes and some of these other people who took orders from Adams.
They feel betrayed.
Is that they feel betrayed. Mm. Is that they say, I did these things telling myself that the ends would justify the means. And what you've done is you've changed the means.
That there would be a united Ireland.
There would be a united Ireland, and there might be a great deal of bloodshed in order to get there, but we would get there. And you've changed the game. And then in addition to doing that, Adams would rather blithely say, oh, well, I personally was never in the IRA. I didn't order any of these things. I don't have any of that blood on my hands myself. And that drove some of these people mad. I mean, I think some of it was PTSD and trauma, but there was also a sense of a very acute sense of betrayal.
Clearly, you do not find Gerry Adams an attractive figure in many, many ways. On the other hand, this is a question of incredible historical significance in the region. And it was resolved, and it was resolved with Gerry Adams at the center of it. So in the end, how do you think history will treat Gerry Adams?
This is one of the great ironies of Adams as a figure. I find him emotionally very unsympathetic, downright sociopathic in his kind of clinical tendency to just cast aside anybody who's not useful to him anymore. But politically, Adams was the one who realized that you need to end this fight. And so I do think that there's an enduring irony in the idea that this is a man who was guilty of ordering perhaps the most notorious war crime of the conflict that he then helped to end.
So Say Nothing is, in my mind, two books at once. First, it's the best book about the Troubles I've ever read, and that's on one side. On the other, it's a murder mystery, and you solve it. Your book discusses Dolores Price. She was a possibility in your mind. An IRA member named Patrick McClure, who was a possibility for reasons that you get into. And there's a third person. And in a sense, this book is a whodunit. I don't want to make light of it, but there's a mystery that's solved here, and a third person is named. What is it like to accuse somebody of murder in a book, and have you heard from this person?
It was certainly the most intense decision I've ever made in my career as a reporter and writer, I'll tell you that. There was a lot of lawyering, as you'd imagine, and this person is still alive and had never been associated with this murder.
Had he or she been associated with any other murder?
Yes. So it was a former IRA member. But I'll put it to you this way, leaving aside the legal issue, morally, I would never have named the name and pointed the finger at someone and accused them of carrying out, you know, one of the most heinous war crimes of the Troubles, of a terrible conflict.
Have you gotten a response from the accused?
So I initially reached out to this person's lawyer in May and got nothing, and got in touch again, got nothing, and it said, I'm going to publish this book accusing your client. Nothing. The book came out in...
Not even a response, a negative response, a cease and desist, anything?
Nothing. And the book came out in November in the UK and Ireland, in part because it had this news in it, which they wanted to get out because it was a fairly newsworthy thing over there. And it was excerpted in the Sunday Times. They got in touch with the lawyer a few days before publishing the excerpt, got a no comment. A few days after the book came out, this person released a statement saying it wasn't true, but that they wouldn't be saying anything more about it. And I've heard nothing since.
Now, one thing we've forgotten here is 10 kids lost their mother and became orphans instantly. What became of those 10 children, the McConville children?
Well, things didn't get any easier for them. It was heartbreaking. They initially tried to stay in the family apartment because they thought their mother might be coming back. But eventually the state stepped in and they said, look, if you're going to put us into a home, can you at least have us all be together? And the state split them up and put them in different orphanages. And those orphanages were every bit as bad as you might imagine that Irish orphanages would have been in this period of time. And so the kids were re-victimized in a whole series of awful ways.
When you made this name public, how did the kids, who are now obviously well-grown, how did they react?
It was an intense experience. I wrote a letter to Jean McConville's children prior to the book coming out, telling them what I'd learned. And they'd always had a different idea of what might have happened. They were extremely surprised about the identity of the person who I pointed to. But what I heard from a lot of people who have watched this case closely and know some of the parties involved is, again, this idea that they were both shocked to learn the identity of this person, but when you thought about it, it made perfect sense.
Patrick, in many ways, the Troubles feel like a long time ago. You found that sources were still sometimes reluctant to talk to you, even now, for fear of the IRA. And as recently as last month, a car bomb was discovered in Northern Ireland, which is not good news. Do you feel as though the Troubles are somehow bubbling up again in some form or another?
Well, I think that...
And why is there an IRA?
Well, that's a big question. There's a line that Jerry Adams used famously. He was giving a speech and somebody in the audience yells, "Bring back the IRA." And Adams leaned into the microphone and said, "They haven't gone away, you know." And this is a big question in Northern Ireland. Is this idea of, is the IRA still there? And there definitely is some form of it that continues to exist. And tensions are high. And I think they're only going to get higher if with Brexit we see some possibility of the return of a hard border between the Republic of Ireland and the North. So on one level, to the extent that there's a thesis in this book, it's that the past will not stay buried, and if you ignore this kind of history, it will come back and have its revenge. And I think we're seeing that a little bit in the Brexit context. Having said that, some of the more alarmist coverage of the situation recently has suggested that you could get a return to the bad old days of 1972, and I think that's pretty unlikely. I think that you could see on the margins great tension and maybe a little violence here and there, but I don't think there's the appetite for people to go back at this point.
Patrick Keefe, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The New Yorker's Patrick Radden Keefe. His book about the Troubles and the murder of Jean McConville is called Say Nothing, and it comes out this week.